Hello, angels. It is me, Willow, and I am here with the fifth installment of my reading of Dante Alighieri's The Divine Comedy from the book Inferno. We are, you know, actually a significant amount of way in. Like, we've made a dent. We are starting at Canto 11, which means if you haven't heard the first 10 cantos, they are in the media channel of my Discord server, pinned. They are on my Twitter, if you can scroll through all my shit posts, and they are at the bottom of my Safe Work Audio Index on Reddit, which is pinned in my profile, so it should be very easy to find. If you haven't heard them already, I sincerely suggest that you listen to them, because this is an incredibly difficult piece of literature to follow. If you don't have the book with you, it can be really, really difficult to understand what the fuck is going on. Sometimes I even get lost in what's prose and what's dialogue, and I'm reading it off the page. But if you have the book and you can read along with me, I sincerely suggest it. I think it'd be best. Because, you know, I mean, it's not an easy one to understand. It's beautiful, and it's translated from the original Latin, which makes it a little bit difficult. But on top of that, also doesn't have modern sentence structure. And that being said, this is the part of the audio where I ask you super politely to be nice to me. I'm gonna trip and fall over my words. I'm gonna stumble over things, names and locations that are in this book I probably will not be able to pronounce, and that's just gonna be how it's gonna be. I'm way too lazy to go through and look things up beforehand, because this is not an audiobook. If you're looking for an audiobook, I'm gonna suggest you Google it. I'm sure there's a really sexy, deep-voiced man out there who did this really well and really fluidly and sounded fantastic, and I am not him. Please consider this more like a friend reading to you, because that's all it is. If you're here because you like the story, awesome. I am so excited to keep going. I read this in college, and I haven't gotten to read it since, and I'm super excited. If you're here because you like listening to me talk, also awesome. I don't understand, but, you know, I'm really, really glad that you're here. Anyway, I don't know how long I'm going to read today. I was really tired last night, so I only did 2 cantos. I'm probably going to get 3 done today. I'm not really that tired, and I'm really excited to read. This is the part of the night where I get to sit down and just hang by myself, you know? I can just sort of do something for me. So, I'm thrilled. Anyway, like I said, we're starting on Canto 11. I have hiccups. The little blurb under Canto 11 is the broken rocks, Pope Anastasius, and the general description of the Inferno and its divisions. So that's what you're getting into this go-round. I have my glasses on. I have something to drink, I am cozy in bed, the lights are dim but bright enough that I can see, and I hope you get comfy and cozy as well, because I think it would be great. That's it, that's all I got. No thoughts, head empty. Gonna read. Ironically, this is the first time I've recorded this intro, so maybe we are blessed and I will get through this section pretty well. Alright, here we go. Canto 11. Out of Dante Alighieri's The Divine Comedy from the book Inferno. Upon the margin by a lofty bank, which great rocks broken in a circle made, we came upon a still more cruel throng. And there, by reason of the horrible excess of stench the deep abyss throws out, we drew ourselves aside behind the cover of a great tomb, whereon I saw a writing which said, Pope Anastasius, I hold, whom out of the right way Phonetus drew. Slow it behoveth our descent to be, so that the sense be first a little used to that sad blast, and then we shall not heed it. The master thus, and unto him I said, some compensation find, that the time pass not idly, and he, thou seest I think of that. My son, upon the inside of these rocks, began he then to say, are 3 small circles from grade to grade, like those which thou art leaving. They are full of spirits maledict, but that hereafter sight alone suffice thee, hear how and wherefore they are in constraint. Of every malice that winds hate in heaven, injury is the end, and all such end, either by force or fraud, afflicteth others. But because fraud is man's peculiar vice, more it displeases God, and so stands lowest the fraudulent, and greater dole assails them. All the first circle of the violent is, but since force may be used against three persons, in three rounds 'tis divided and constructed. To God, to ourselves, and to our neighbor can we use force. I say on them and on their things, as thou shalt hear with reason manifest. A death by violence and painful wounds are to our neighbor given, and his substance ruin and arson and injurious levies. Whence homicides and he who smites unjustly, marauders and freebooters, and the first round tormenteth all in companies diverse. Man may lay violent hands upon himself and his own goods, and therefore in the second round must perforce without avail repent, whoever of your world deprives himself, my apologies, who games and dissipates his property, and weepeth there where he should jocund be. Jocund be? Good question. So that's a word. Violence can be done the deity in heart denying and blaspheming him, and by disdaining nature and her bounty. And for this reason doth the smallest round seal with its signet Sodom and Cohors, and who, disdaining God, speaks from the heart. Fraud, wherewithal is every conscience stung, a man may practice upon him who trusts, and him who doth no confidence in verse. This latter mode, it would appear, dissevers only the bond of love which nature makes. Wherefore within the second circle nestle hypocrisy, flattery, and who deals in magic, falsification, theft, and simony, panders and barters, and like filth. By which the other mode forgotten is that love which nature makes, and what is after added, from which there is a special faith engendered. Hence in the smallest circle, where the point is of the universe upon which dis is seated, where whoever betrays forever is consumed. And I, my master, clear enough proceeds thy reasoning, and full well distinguishes this cavern and the people who possess it. But tell me, those within that fat lagoon, whom the wind drives and whom the rain doth beat, and who encounter with such bitter tongues, wherefore are they inside of the Red City, not punished, if God has them in his wrath? And if he is not, wherefore in such fashion? And unto me he said, why wander so thine intellect from that which it is wont? Or soothe thy mind, where is it elsewhere looking? Hast thou no recollection of the words with which thine ethics thoroughly discusses the dispositions three, that heaven abides not in incontinence? And malice and insane bestiality, and how incontinence less God offendeth and less blame attracts. Yeah, that definitely looks like incontinence. All right. Maybe it meant something else in Latin. If thou regardest this conclusion as well, and to thy mind recallest who they are that up outside are undergoing penance, clearly wilt thou perceive why from these felons they are separated are, and why less wrath justice divine both smite them with its hammer. O sun, that healest all distempered vision, thou dost content me so, when thou revoltest, that doubting pleases me no less than knowing. Once more a little backwards turn he, said I, there where thou sayest that unsury offends goodness divine, and disengage the knot. Philosophy, he said, to him who heeds it, noteth, not only in one place alone, after what nature after what manner nature takes her course, from intellect divine, and from its art, and if thy physics carefully thou notest, after not many pages shall thou find, that this your art, as far as possible, follows as the disciple doth the master, so that your art is, as it were, God's grandchild. From these two, if thou bringest thy mind Genesis at the beginning, it behooves mankind to gain their life and to advance. And since the usurer takes another way, nature herself and in her follower disdains he, for elsewhere he puts his hope. But follow now, as I would fain go on, for quivering are the fishes on the horizon, and the wane wholly over Carus lies, and far beyond there we descend the crag. I'm gonna get a drink.
Don't fall.
Also, I need to uncross my legs because they are uncomfortable. I wonder if I can get comfy under this blanket with the book between my legs. Wish me luck. Okay. All right, have you settled? I have the book on my lap. Here's hoping you can still hear me. All right. We're on to Canto 7. The Minotaur, the Seventh Circle, the Violent. The River Philogethon, Violent Against the Neighbors, the Centaurs, and Tyrants. It's a little blurb under Canto 12. God, I really can't math today. The place where to descend the bank we came was alpine, and from what was there, moreover, of such a kind that every eye would shun. Such as that ruin is which in the flank smote, on this side of Trent, the adage either by earthquake or by falling sway. Stay. For from the mountain's top, for which it moved, unto the plain the cliff is shattered so, some path 'twould give him who was above. Even such was the descent of that ravine, and on the border of the broken chasm the infamy of Crete was stretched along, who was convinced in this fictitious cow, and when he us beheld he bit himself, even as one whom anger racks within. My sage towards him shouted, peradventure. Cool. Thou thinkest that they may be the Duke of Athens, who in the world above brought death to thee. Get thee gone, beast, for this one cometh not instructed by thy sister, but he comes in order to behold your punishments. As is that bull who breaks loose at the moment in which he has received the mortal blow, who cannot walk, but staggers here and there. The Minotaur beheld I do the like, and he, the wary, cried, run to the passage, while he wroth, 'tis well thou shouldest descend. Thus down we took our way o'er that discharge of stones, which oftentimes did move themselves beneath my feet from the unwonted burden. Thoughtful I went, and he said, thou art thinking perhaps upon this ruin, which is guarded by that brute anger which just now I quenched. Now will I have thee know, and the other time I here descended to the nether hell, this precipice had not yet fallen down. But truly, if I well discern, a little before his coming, who the mighty spoil bore off from Dis, in the supernal circle, upon all sides the deep and loathsome valley trembled so, that I thought the universe was thrilled by love, by which there are who think the world oftentimes converted into chaos. And at that moment, this primeval crag, both here and elsewhere, made such an overthrow. But find thine eyes below, for draweth near the river of blood, within which boiling is whoever by violence doth injure others. O blind cupidity, O wrath insane, that spurs us onward so in our short life, and in the eternal then so badly steeps us. I saw an ample moat bent like a bow, as one which all the plain encompasses, conformable to what my guide had said. And between this and the embankment's foot, centaurs in file were running, armed with arrows, as in the world they used the chase to follow. Beholding us descended, each one stood still, and from the squadron three detached themselves, with bows and arrows in advance selected. And from afar one cried, "Unto what torment come ye, who down the hillside are descending? Tell us from there, if not, I draw the bow." My master said, "Our answer will make the Charon near you there, an evil hour that will of thine was evermore so hasty." Then he touched me and said, "This one is Nessus, who perished for the lovely Dejanara, and for himself did vengeance take. And he in the mist, who at his breast is gazing, is the great Charon, who brought up Achilles, that other Phullus is, who was so wrathful. Thousands and thousands go about the moat, shooting with shafts whatever soul emerges, out of blood more than his crime allots." Near we approached, unto those monsters' fleet, Charon an arrow took, and with the notch backward upon his jaws, he put his beard. After he had uncovered his great mouth, he said to his companions, "Are you aware that he behind moveth whatever he touches? Thus are not wont to do the feet of dead men." And my good guide, who now was at his breast where the two natures together are joined, replied, "Indeed he lives, and thus alone me it behooves to show him the dark valley. Necessity and not delight impels us." Someone withdrew from singing hallelujah, who unto me committed this new office. "No thief is he, nor I a thievish spirit. But by that virtue, though, through which I am moving my steps along this savage thoroughfare, give us some one of thine to be with us, and who may show us where to pass the ford, and who may carry this one on his back, for 'tis no spirit that can walk on air." Upon his right breast, Charon wheeled about and said to Nessus, "Turn, and do thou guide him, and warn aside, if other band may meet you. We with our faithful escort onward moved along the brink of the vermilion boiling, wherein the boiled were uttering loud laments. People I saw within up to the eyebrows. And the great centaur said, "Tyrants are these, who dealt in bloodshed and pillaging. Here they lament their pitiless mischiefs. Here is Alexander and fierce Dionysus, who upon Sicily brought dolorous years. That forehead there which has hair so black is Aeson, and the other who is blonde, Obizo, is Aveste, who, in truth, up in the world was by his stepson slain." Then I turned to the poet, and he said, "Now he be first to thee, and second to I." A little further on the centaur stopped, above a folk, who far down as the throat seemed from that boiling stream to issue forth. A shade he showed us on one side alone, saying, "He cleft asunder in God's bosom the heart that still upon Thames is honored." Then people saw I, who from the river lifted their heads, and also all the chest, and many among these I recognized. Thus ever more and more grew shallower that blood, so that the feet alone it covered, and there across the moat our passage was. Even as thou here upon this side beholdest the boiling stream, that a diminishes, the centaur said, "I wish thee to believe that on this other more and more declines its bed, until it reunites itself where it behooveth tyranny to grow. Justice divine upon this side is goading that Attila, who was a scourge on the earth, and Pyrrhus, and Sextus, and forever milks the tears which the boiling it unseals, in Rinner de Cornetto and Rinner Pazzo, who made upon the highways so much war." Then back he turned, and passed again the ford.
Okay.
Canto 13, I'm not going to take a break. This little blurb says the Wood of Thorns, the Harpies, the Violent Against Themselves, suicides, Pierre de Vigna, and then something in Latin, which I hope doesn't come up. Not yet had Nessus reached the other side when we had put ourselves within a wood that was not marked by any path whatever. Not foliage green, but of a dusky color. Not branches smooth, but gnarled and intertangled. Not apple trees were there, but thorns with poison. Such tangled thickets have not, nor so dense those savage wild beasts that in hatred hold twixt Sinia and Cornetto the tilled places. There do not hideous harpies make their nests, who chase the Trojans from the Strophades? Sure. With sad announcement of a pending doom. Broad wings have they, and necks and faces human, and feet with claws and their great bellies fledged, and they make laments upon the wondrous trees. And the good master, ere thou enter further, know that thou art within the second round. Thus he began to say, and shall be, till thou comest out upon the horrible sand. Therefore look well around, and thou shalt see things that will credence give unto my speech. I heard on all sides lamentations uttered, and person none beheld I who might make them, whence, utterly bewildered, I stood still. I think he thought that I perhaps might think so many voices issued through these trunks, from people who concealed themselves from us. Therefore my master said, if thou break off some little spray from any of these trees, the thoughts thou hast will wholly be made in vain. Then stretched I forth my hand a little forward and plucked a branchlet from the great thorn, and the trunk cried, why dost thou mangle me? After it had become embrowned with blood, I recommended its cry, why dost thou rend me? Hast thou no spirit of pity whatsoever? Men once we were, and now we are charged to trees. Indeed, thy hand should be more pitiful, even if the souls of serpents we had been. As of a green brand that is on fire, at one of the ends and from the other drips and hisses with the wind that is escaping. So from that splinter issued forth together both words and bloods, whereat I let the tip fall and stood like a man who was afraid. Had he been able sooner to believe, my sage made answer, O thou woundest soul, what only in my verses has he seen? Not upon thee had he stretched forth his hand, whereas the thing incredible has caused me to put him in to act which grieveth me. But tell him who thou wast, so that by way of some amends thy fame he may refresh up in the world to which he can return. And the trunk said, so thy sweet words allure me, I cannot silent be, and you be vexed not, that I a little to discourse am tempted. I am the one who both keys had in keeping of Frederick's heart, and turned them to and fro, so softly in unlocking and unlocking, that from his secrets most men withheld. Fidelity I bore the glorious office so great, I lost thereby my sleep impulses. The courtesan who never from the dwelling of Caesar turned aside her strumpet eyes, death universal and the vice of courts, inflamed against me all other minds, and they inflamed, did so inflame Augustus, that my glad honors turned to dismal mournings. My spirit, in disdainful exultation, thinking by dying to escape disdain, made me unjust against myself, the just. I, by the roots unwontened of this wood, do swear to you that I never broke my faith unto my lord, who was so worthy of honor. And to the world, if one of you return, let him my memory comfort, which is lying still prostrate from the blow that envy dealt it. Waited a while, and then, since he is silent, the poet said to me, lose not the time, but speak and question him, if more may please thee. Whence I to him, Do thou again inquire concerning what thou thinkest will satisfy me, for I cannot, such pity is in my heart. Therefore he recommended, so may the man do for thee freely what thy speech implores. Spirit incarnate, again be pleased to tell us what way the soul is bound within these knots, and tell us if thou canst, if any, from such remember ever is freed. Then blew the trunk amain, and afterward the wind was into such voice converted, with brevity shall be replied to you. When the exasperated soul abandons the body whence it rents itself away, Minos consigns it to the seventh abyss. It falls into the forest, and no part is chosen for it, but where fortune hurls it, there like a grain of salt it germinates. It springs a sapling and a forest tree. The harpies, feeding upon its leaves, do pain the creature, and for pain an outlet. Like others, for our spoils shall we return, but not that anyone may them revest, for it's not just to have what one casts off. Here we shall drag them, and along the dismal forest our bodies shall suspend be, each to the thorn of the molested shade. We were attentive still unto the trunk, thinking that more it yet might wish to tell us, when by a tumult we were overtaken, the same way as he is who perceives the boar and chase approaching to his stand, who hears the crashing of the beasts in the branches. And to behold, upon our left hand side, naked and scratched, fleeing so furiously that of the forest every fan they broke. He who was in advance, now help, death, help! And the other one, who seemed to lag too much, was shouting, Leno, we are not so alert. Those legs of thine jousting, said the topo. And then, perchance because his breathing was failing, he grouped himself together with a bush. Behind them was the forest full of black she-mastiffs, ravenous and swift of foot as greyhounds, who were issuing from the chain. On him he had crouched down, they set their teeth, and him they lacerated piece by piece. Thereafter bore away those aching members. Thereat my escort took me by the hand and led me to the bush, that all in vain was weeping from its bloody lacerations. Oh, Jacobo, I don't know how to say that. And it said, Ascent, Andrea, which helped it thee to me, of me to make a screen. What blame have I in thy nefarious life? When near him had the master stayed his steps, he said, Oh, wast thou? Who wast thou? That throughout wounds so many art blowing out with blood thy dolorous speech. And he to us, O souls that hither come to look upon the shameful massacre that has so rent away me from me my leaves, gather them up beneath the dismal bush, I of that city of which the Baptist changed its first patron. Wherefore he is this, wherefore he for this, forever with his art will make it sad. And were it not that on the pass of Arno some glimpses of him remaining still, those citizens who afterwards rebuilt it upon the ashes left by Attila in vain had caused their labor to be done. Of my own house I made thyself a gibbet. I think we'll call it there. We read to, what was that, 13? So 11, 12, and 13? That works. Thank you, guys. I enjoyed that. We're past page 100 in the book, and this book has about 600 pages, I think. Let me check. Closer to 700 pages. Which, I mean, I've only read 5 parts, so it'll be a while longer. But, I'm enjoying it, and I hope you are too. So, as always, have a wonderful night, my angels, and I love you very much!